inspiration here. Those are the states between the East Coast and the West Coast. You know, a lot of people that live on the East Coast or the West Coast, they think that's the U.S. But what's in the middle is nothing. So the term comes from flying on an airplane from, say, New York to L.A. and forgetting about what you're flying over. In our Bible studies, we sometimes encounter what I like to call flyover passages. Things that we read that are just skim past without much thought. The New Testament Gospels offer parallel accounts of the life of Jesus Christ. And we have learned Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called the Synoptic Gospels. As opposed to the Gospel of John, these books mirror each other in their content. Even so, they don't always record the events exactly the same between the different recorders of the event. They're synoptic, they're not synchronous. They form a general outline. They sometimes find references to certain facts in one account that are not reported in the other. Our lesson today will deal with just such an occurrence, but a detail we probably have overlooked in our Bible studies as we pass through this passage. In our adult Bible class, we recently encountered just such an occurrence. If you would, turn your Bibles to Matthew chapter 8, verses 23 and 27. And everything I read this morning is going to come from the New King James Version. Matthew chapter 8, verses 23 through 27. And here we read. Now when he got into his boat, the disciples followed him. Then suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea, so that the boat was covered with waves, but he was asleep. Then his disciples came to him and woke him, saying, Lord, save us, we're perishing. But he said to them, Why are you fearful, O you of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. So the men marveled, saying, Who can this be that the winds and the sea obey you? For this study, we need to understand a few things about the geography of the area. I've never been there, but I heard that the Sea of Galilee is the most peaceful and restful and beautiful body of water you've ever seen. The waters are quietly nestled along the surrounding mountains. The size of the Sea of Galilee is about 8 miles wide and 13 miles long, about the size of Washington. But due to the surrounding topography, as you can see in these maps, it's subject to sudden torrents of wind that come rushing down through the mountain passes, and it channels peaceful waters into angry waves to endanger the safety of small boats. The cooler air from the north, combined with the warmer air from the south, sometimes creating instant storms. Our account for today's lesson is recorded by Matthew, Mark, and Luke. The context of the story finds that Jesus has healed Peter's mother-in-law with fever. And then later that evening, he had healed men who were sick and were demon-possessed. As was often the case, the multitude was so great that it interfered with the Lord's work. If you remember in Mark chapter 2, verse 4, remember the story about the paralytic man? They had to bring him up on a roof, break to the roof, and let him down through the roof to see Jesus because the multitude was so great. And again in Luke chapter 8 and verse 19, we read about Jesus' mother and brothers coming to see him and they couldn't be there because of the multitudes. Perhaps that's the reason why in verse 18, Jesus said, let's go to the other side of the sea. Also recorded in this passage is the text commonly called the cost of discipleship. If you turn to Matthew chapter 8, verses 19 through 22. Matthew chapter 8, verses 19 through 22. This immediately precedes the text we read Suddenly the winds whipped up and whipped that boat around like a fisherman's cork on the sea. Matthew tells us in verse 24 that the boat was covered in water. That waking Jesus, who spoke to the wind and waves, and just as suddenly he spoke, the calm returned. Faithful Bible students know that all the miracles that Jesus performed were to confirm his deity and his position as the Son of God. If you turn to John chapter 20, verses 30 and 31. And truly, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. Just as the storms frequently come on the Sea of Galilee, so too do storms come in our lives. To be a Christian and follow Christ, it doesn't exempt us from the tempests that often disturb our lives. God does not always shield you from the storm, but he helps you move through it. Safety consists not in the absence of danger, but in the presence of God. The peace that the gospel gives is not the absence of trouble, but rather is the confidence that God is always there with you. But regardless of how rough the seas may be, remember that if we have Christ, he can see us through those rough seas. Remember our story referring back to Matthew chapter 8. The disciples cry out, "Lord, save us, we are perishing," in verse 25. Because of their fearfulness and lack of trust, Jesus said to those in the boat with him, "Why are you afraid, O you of little faith?" That's in verse 26. This story serves as an example to us that we should trust in the Lord in everything. Now that we've reviewed the basic facts of this account, let's move to a point that I mentioned earlier about parallel accounts in the gospel. As I mentioned earlier, sometimes not all the events are recorded exactly the same. Turn with me to Mark chapter 4, verse 36. Mark chapter 4, verse 36. This is where we find our flyover passage. We read the account in Matthew. We read the account in Luke. We read the account in Mark. This account has something the others don't. It says, "Now when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as it was, and other little boats with him also." That's the part that we sometimes get caught up in the bigger story. We don't key in on this little passage. Other little boats with him also. This will serve as the basis for the remainder of my sermon this morning. How many times have you read this account and not understood or considered that there were other boats on the sea within that time? We might wrongly conclude that only those in Jesus' boat experienced the fury of the storm that night. I wrongly conclude that all appear on the sea that night was only in Jesus' boat. And we also might wrongly conclude that only the handful on Jesus' boat profited from the power of the Lord that night. Let's fully appreciate the impact of that statement and other little boats were with me. Those boats were on the same stormy seas as the Lord's boat. Those boats were being tossed to and fro by the same storm. Those boats were being filled with water by the high wind and waves, just as the boat Jesus was in. Those in the other boats were as much peril as those in Jesus' boat. Those small boats were sailing in the same darkness and danger as Jesus' boat. For the moment, put yourself in the same situation, out of a dark and stormy so preoccupied with what's going on in our lives and our little boat's called life that we hardly recognize there are other boats around us in the sea of life until someone like Mark comes along to remind us. We often get busy with our own cares, our jobs, our businesses, our financial portfolios, our financial worries, our vacations and retirements, our own entertainment and leisure lifestyle, our own problems, worries, and concerns. We often don't stop to think how it all may be affecting the other boats in our lives. We often get caught up on our own cares, so much for our time and attention, and we think it's nobody's business and nobody's watching what we do here in our own little boat. But there really are other little boats out there in the sea of life, and like it or not, what we do here in our own little boat does have an effect on the lives of all the other people and all those other little boats, for good or for bad. There are always others watching, and what we do and what we say when we're unaware. There's a story about a mother who took her son shopping one day, and they shopped all day, and they get to the last store, and they're checking out, and the clerk offers the son a lollipop. And the mother looks at the son and says, "Now what do you say?" And the son said, "Charge it." So, people are watching, little ones are watching. Well, that's a humorous story. There's a lot of truth to it. Young people watch those around them and often model their behavior after them. My father was a great influence on me. He was a true warrior, though most didn't know. When he was in Korea, his company was in North Korea, and they got surrounded on three sides by the Chinese soldiers. Now, my dad didn't know anything about locomotives, but his company found a locomotive. Dad got on there and figured out how to start that thing and how to back it up. They loaded their company on and backed up in there. He was a jack of all trades. He, along with my grandfather, built a house that I grew up in and Mom just left. It was very hard to have Mom leave that house knowing that her husband and her dad had built it. He poured our concrete porches, patios, sidewalks. He laid linoleum. He built our pole barn, among many other things, and he had us kids help. I don't think my dad really thought about the influence he's had. In his mind, he was getting free help. But that was a great influence on me. Today, I had the same mindset. My first house I owned, I had a room on. I built a screen porch on my existing house. I poured all my own sidewalks. I wired my own detached garage and pole barn. I built storage sheds for myself and for my relatives. I built my kids' playhouses when they were young. And now I build the furniture. And I raise my own garden. I have my dad's mindset, all from watching him. As my children grew older, I realized the influence that I had on them. I had a young son that would eat macaroni and cheese with ketchup on it. Not because I told him to, but he saw me do it. And it's not a bad thing. So, have you ever said something and out of your mouth came your parents? That happens a lot. I smile when it happens to my kids. They always say, "I'm going to be like you." Yeah. If some child should see us behaving as we should, we'd be lost because of it, to deliver ourselves. Jesus warned us about this. Turn to Matthew 18, verses 1 through 6. Matthew 18, verses 1 through 6. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Then Jesus called a little child to him, sat him in the midst of them, and said, "Assuredly, I say to you, unless you are converted and become as little children, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself as this little child, watching you. And these are the lyrics. Driving you through town, he's just avoiding you. With a half a meal in his booster seat. Knowing that he couldn't have the toy till he's not in the car. The green traffic line turned straight to red. I hit my brakes and I mumbled under my breath. As the fries went flying and the orange shrimp curved slap. But then my 4-year-old said a 4-letter word that started with S and I was concerned. So I said, son, now where'd you learn to talk like that? He said, I've been watching you, ain't that cool? I'm your buckaroo, I want to be just like you. I need all my food and grows tall as you are. We got cowboy boots and camo pants. Yeah, we're just alike, hey, yeah. I want to do everything you do, so I've been watching you. That sums it up pretty good. That dad got the answer to his question. People often say, it's nobody's business what I do. All my friends are mistaken, we are. If you turn to Romans chapter 14, verse 7. Romans chapter 14, verse 7 would be, for none of us lives to himself, and no one dies to himself. But those that are Aaron brothers and Aaron sisters, are there little boats in your life? Is your Aaron lifestyle and your unfaithfulness as a child of God keeping someone who knows you and knows that you're a professed Christian from becoming a child of God themselves? I've often heard it said, if Christianity was a crime, would there be enough evidence to convict you? Even though you may wish it, your conduct, your actions, and your words will have an effect on those around you and those who know you. Turn to 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, we read instructions to Timothy. Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. And then, no discussion of influence could be complete without a review of Matthew 5, 13 through 16. Matthew 5, 13 through 16. Here you read the words of Jesus. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp, put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all the room now. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Salt was very important in the time of Christ. It's no accident to use it as an example of what our influence should be. Today, if you want seasonings, you can go to a grocery and they've got a quarter to a half a mile dedicated to seasonings. But that wasn't the case in the first century. Seasonings were highly valued, and there were few of them. In the first century, in those times, salt was so important that sometimes Roman soldiers were paid with salt. The Roman term salarium for this payment is where we get the term salary. This is also where we get the phrase, someone's not worth their salt. Salt in those days was rarely what we have today on our tables. It's in the top human, pure, clean, crystal. The way it was harvested some salt in the grass and see what happens. You're going to have a dead spot. Already from the inflammation, it is a poisonous thing. And salt has a promoting ability. Salt has a promoting ability. Just as salt promotes thirst, as Christians, our influence should promote thirst for the righteous living we exhibit with those around us. Salt changes nearly everything it touches. So too should our influence. We should change those around us from Christian living and proper example. We're admonished in this passage to show that our influence is in good works that glorify our Father in heaven. What about those who say, what I'm doing is not wrong for me? The Bible has something to say about that too. Turn to Proverbs chapter 12, verse 15. In Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 15, we read, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who needs counsel is wise. Likewise, Matthew 5:14 through 16, we are told that we are to be lights that shine for all to see. Doing so necessitates that we are an influence for those who see us. Light does not struggle to be noticed when it's introduced into a dark place. If we're lights, we're meant to shine brightly. God does not want us to isolate ourselves from the world. We must be seen by others to fulfill our purpose of light. And remember the song, hiding under a bushel, no, I'm going to let it shine. Light illuminates darkness, and this world is darkness. How many of you have ever been on a tour of Mammoth Cave? On your tour, they take you down. You get down there and they turn the lights out. That's about as dark can be. But when those lights come on, and you can see it again, it shows you the true power of light. Light exposes what is in the darkness. As Christians, it exposes evil. As children, in the darkness, it's monsters when we are there. As adults, evil in the world. And light shows you the way out of darkness. And remember the last portion of the passage, that they may see your good works. You would turn to Psalms 119 and verse 105. Psalms 119 is the longest chapter in the Bible. In Psalms 119 and 105, we read, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. Remember what Jesus said in the parable of the revealed light over Luke 8, verse 16. Luke 8, verse 16, we read, no one, when he has lit a lamp, covers it with a vessel or puts it under a bed, but sets it on a lampstand, saying, that those men might see the light. Years ago, I'm not sure if they're still doing it or not, Southside, after Sunday morning service, had a radio call-in program. And I would work the board for a 2 minutes answering questions. It was a call-in part of any question you had about the Bible and try to answer. Well, we had a man who regularly called. He seemed to have a good memory of the scriptures, and he often wanted to make his viewpoints on them. Well, we were more than willing to discuss doctrinal matters with him and engage in discussion of the scriptures. He final chapter of our book. But most importantly of all, is your name written in the book of all books, the book of life. We are the only spiritual book that a lot of people in this world will ever read. From our lesson, Jesus did not use salt and light casually as examples. They're great influences. Each of us has an influence. It may be a good one or a bad one, but we have an influence just as surely as we have a judgment coming. God will hold us accountable for our influences as well as our actions. As we learn from the parable of the talents in Matthew 25, we can't run and hide as a Christian in isolation. We must use our talents and therefore our influences to give God the increase. Our influence is one way to do so. That's what being the salt of the earth and the light that shines is about. People sometimes wonder what this world is coming to. The answer is whatever kind of influence you and I have on it. While Jesus stilled the tempest on that little boat, it was still for the other little boats around it too. We need to remember that there are little boats in our lives, and they're influenced by what we're doing in our life. I'll leave you a story. It's on the back of your handout. It's called When You Thought I Wasn't Looking. It's from page 162 of Stories from the Eden, compiled by Alice Gregory. It says, when you thought I wasn't looking, I saw you hang my first painting on your refrigerator, and I wanted to paint another one. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw you feed a stray cat, and I thought it was good to be kind to animals. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw you make my favorite cake just for me, and I knew that little things are special things. When you thought I wasn't looking, I heard you say a prayer, and I believe there was a God I could talk to. When you thought I wasn't looking, I felt you kiss me goodnight, and I felt loved. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw tears come from your eyes, and I learned that sometimes things hurt, but it's all right to try. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw that you cared, and I wanted to be everything that I could be. When you thought I wasn't looking, I looked, and I wanted to say thanks for all the things I saw when you thought I wasn't looking. That's the lesson. If you're here and you have not confessed Jesus Christ as your Savior, repented of your sin and buried with him in baptism, why not use this opportunity to make your life right with God? Do those things that he asked you and to give your life again as a child of God. If you are a Christian and you're now away from the flock and have not been the influence on others that you need to be, if your salt has lost its flavor and your light is dimmed, don't let this time slip away. Tomorrow may be too late. Why not come forward and confess those things, and we'll pray with you and ask God to forgive you. If you're in any way subject to